I check it like you read Sinkball in it, yeah? I really don't mind. You hit me once,
I hit you back. He's bowling like my Auntie Annie when she'd had too much sherry to drink. Played over my head,
then I set fire. मैंने कहा बेटा बेटा होता है और बाप बाप होता है.
Hello and welcome to Pie Checkers Cricket Podcast. I'm Vivek and joining me are Sai and Sumer to do the pie checking today. Now, before we start this episode, a big shout out to all those who are liking, sharing and commenting on the videos. And for all of those who have not, we request you to please do it. It would mean a lot to us. So today we have the pleasure of having with us who played for Sri Lanka at the highest level for over a decade. A decade, especially the first half of the decade, really painful for us Indians, but we'll get there. He was known for being calm, composed, but a tough nut on the field. He played 44 tests, 180 ODIs, and a T20 for Sri Lanka. And post his cricketing career, is an accomplished commentator. Russell Arnold, welcome to Pie Checkers Cricket Podcast.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me. And I'm waiting for this pie. Actually, it's tea time where I am.
We will get there. Now they say records are meant to be broken, Russell. But there is one record which will never be taken away from you. Can you guess that?
Oh, boy. I'm not really sure there what that would be.
So there is a trivia which goes by that Russell Arnold is the first Sri Lankan to receive the T20 ODI cap.
Oh, yes. So yes.
Player number one.
Yes. So when I was around playing for Sri Lanka, that's when T20 was coming in. We played England at Southampton. And the second T20 that Sri Lanka ever played was 2-3 years later after I had retired. And of course, since my name starts with A, I get the number one there. So yeah, something.
Perfect.
Congratulations on that. So going back to the beginning, Russell, how did it all start? How did you get into the game? Your beginning, basically.
Well, it's like all of you guys. We just play in the streets where I lived, 20 meters from the beach. So we played cricket on the beach, right opposite where I grew up or where I was born. There was a park. So we just played tennis ball cricket. And that's where we start liking it. That's where we start loving it. And that's where we grow from. Luckily, as a youngster, my mum was able to afford a fluent school. So cricket was kind of big there. Came through the ranks and suddenly you find yourself in places that you would have only dreamt of. So it was a quiet journey. Nothing extravagant, as you would say, because it's just going through the motions, just enjoying every moment of it. But nothing to beat the days that you were growing up and playing with those tennis balls. There was a time I mentioned the park that we played in. We have to go up early. And since I lived across the road, I had the stumps, the bat, everything. So by 5:30 in the morning, I got to be out there getting the best pitch because there's so many matches that happen there. Maybe 5 meters away, there's another pitch created and another match on. Sometimes a fielder from the other games fielding on your pitch. So we have those issues. You have a bit of argy-bargy. And it's great those days. There's also how impatient or passionate we were about the game. When you're on the batting side of one of the teams, you're playing in another match as well. You're fielding in that game. So, all these type of complications do come in. And as I mentioned, plenty of argy-bargy that comes in. So growing up was that. And then school cricket, of course, with more knowledgeable coaches and opportunities, you tend to grow. So that's kind of where it all started, I would say.
Interesting. That reminds us of a lot of Shivaji Park and the stories which come out of Shivaji Park in Bombay.
But there you play.
So moving from school.
Isn't it? Shivaji Park, there's a lot of hardball cricket.
Yes,
you have to be. You can't have another match 5 meters from the other pitch. This is what tennis ball that we were associated with at that stage, yes. But similar concept.
We are not alien to that kind of a concept, obviously, here as well.
So, Russell, moving from school cricket or tennis ball cricket to international cricket, you had a very interesting journey in terms of you started off as an opener, but kind of finished as a finisher, in especially in limited overs cricket. Nowadays, it is the kind of journeys is opposite. People start in middle order and finish as an opener. How easy was it, and how did it all happen for you?
Yes, so I grew up as an opener. I played all my school cricket, under 19 tours, A team tours, and I also debuted as an opener.
Yeah.
But as time went on, the one day game was where the initial adjustment was made, where the coaches or the team management felt that I handled pressure better, that I might be good in the middle order. So that's where they experimented with that. So to a certain extent, though it worked for me in the one day format, batting at 5 and 6, I would say my test career took a dive. Because it just didn't work for me. So it's mixed feelings about that. So that's kind of where it all happened. And the changes were made. Marvin Athappatthu was at 3. I was opening with Sanat. But then Marvin wanted to open. So then a change was done. Then Sangakkara came along. So another swap was done. And I was moved to the middle because my one-day role was going along so well. So these type of things tend to happen. But if I look back at my career, I would have liked to be at opening because I think that's where my game really suited. And I have three test hundreds, all three as an opener. And in one of those, I actually batted through the innings. I carried my bat. And as an opener, I averaged 50 plus in about 9 or 10 test matches. But my total test average and career is not that great. So ideally, though it worked in the white ball, not really in test cricket or for me, because that's kind of where I would have liked to be. But also as you go on and you become experienced, you also understand the fact that batting at the top of the order is the best place, especially in the subcontinent, because that's where you get to get the best of it. The ball is nice and hard, doesn't swing as much. If it's a flat pitch, you get to bat. And you get to set the tone of the game. And that's where you can score your big runs. But in the middle order, you're always having to adjust, try to pick up the pace of the game, try to take chances. Sometimes in the flat pitch or a poor bowling attack, you don't even get to bat. So, you know, all these type of pressures do fall on the middle order. So when you're getting more experienced, you feel, I'd better get away from this. So that's a better way of saying I'll bat at the top of the order and you know, set it up, score those big runs and keep the pressure off me. You know, so it's a kind of a weight that does come in. There are very few players who have really excelled in that middle order who can make a big difference. Michael Hussey for one, MS Dhoni, but not many others have good records batting down the order.
In fact, out of my memory, I mean, on top of my head, the only player, especially from an Indian perspective, I remember turning from an opener to a finisher was Ajay Jadeja. He was the only one who kind of had a similar journey, but it kind of just signifies how difficult that role is or how difficult that journey could be.
It really is, because when it comes to selection processes and whatever, you end up being the scapegoat. You're the last man in as a batsman. It's your job to finish off however much your 10 runs or 15 runs that you made was had an impact. The scorecard and the bigger picture tells a different story. So you'd rather be somewhere else as a batsman. So by choice, no one's going to bat in the middle order. I'll tell you that. It's only when that you need to fit into the team or the best decision for the team to accommodate players, when you have to make decisions like that, you have to go with the team plans. But you ask any batsman, everyone would say, I'd rather bat at the top of the order.
Yeah. So now one of the high points of Sri Lankan cricket, Russell, 96 World Cup. Not a lot of people actually, at the start of the tournament, not a lot of people gave Sri Lanka a chance to win the World Cup. Australia, Pakistan, and India were supposed to be the favorites. But boy, what memories do we have playing for Sri Lanka, especially from an Indian perspective. I mean, from my personal memory, I remember we scored some 270 odd in the Delhi match. And we thought it's good enough for us to win. 10 overs in Sri Lankan batting, and the game was over in the first 10 overs. It was killed by Jayasurya and Kaluvitarna. Then we went on to beat Pakistan. And then we got in the semi-final, we had Sanath and Kaluvitarna in the first over. And we were already dreaming of Lahore. And then we batted, and I don't want to discuss that because Kamli was crying on the field. I was crying in my home. I mean, did everybody back home in Sri Lanka believed you could win the World Cup, or was it a surprise for you as well?
Well, we were always hopeful, but I wouldn't say that. Just like you, I don't think many people gave Sri Lanka a chance, even Sri Lankans. You're always watching a game. You're always excited about it. You're enjoying it, and you're hoping for the best. But as time went on in that tournament, it became a little obvious that Sri Lanka knew what they were doing. They seemed to have players in specific roles, had a specific plan, and it was working beautifully. It was being managed really well. So come later in the tournament, getting to the quarters, semi-finals in such a tournament, in such a format, especially in the subcontinent, is not much of a challenge, to be honest. Because the conditions are different, and Sri Lankans, let's say Indians, know to play these type of conditions well. So you're expecting to get over the more Western teams. So you're in a quarter-final, semi-final. And ideally, you are trying to avoid a subcontinent team because they play spin-based cricket and they generally know how to do it. So the real pressure would come up in the semi-final. You're playing India again. And when you said 270, just going back to that point, in that day, yes, 270 is a massive score, probably equal to 350, 400 nowadays. A few years later, 96, I hadn't made my debut. It was in 97 that I first played. And till the end of my career, if we scored 250, we back ourselves to win 9 out of 10 games. That's how it was. But not now. The game has evolved. The game has changed. The way the players play, certain rules, two balls at either end. There's no reverse swing. So all these factors come in. And you now need 300, 325 to say we're getting ahead. So that's how the game has changed. So 272 means, oh, brilliant. Then come to the semi-final. It didn't start off well, but then we had Aravinda De Silva, we had Guru Singh, we got to 250, which was a competitive score. But now you have the problem of India, who plays pretty well. They got a strong batting lineup and the pitch looked good. Till suddenly, things started turning around. It was very surprising. But once the opening happened for Sri Lanka, there was no doubt that they were going to go through because they had the tools. And these guys were switched on. They really knew what they were doing. It was a tremendous feeling watching that semi-final. And then even the final, final 240, you always knew Sri Lanka would get it because Aravinda looked a beast in that tournament. Not only with the bat, you should see him. If you had seen him around the park, there was a lot to like about it. And there was a bit more in it because Australia didn't tour Sri Lanka for the round game. So all that was there. And 95, just before the World Cup, what happened in Australia, those were type of things that brought this team together. And there was a lot of feeling about it. And these guys were not going to slip up. They had things under control, 240. They were going to make it. So it's great memories, and they did it in style. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned 250. Every time you guys scored 250, you backed yourselves to defend it. I mean, that's the memories all of us Indian fans have, which is that playing in Premadasa and a 240, 250 score, we get a good start. And then suddenly the spinners will come in and then they'll dry up all the momentum and all the singles. And before you know it, you are 100 from 1 to 130 for 5 when the game is over. So the Sri Lankans were really good at in that era, controlling the batting with their spinners in the middle overs, especially at home and in the subcontinent.
Yeah, because those are conditions that would suit the type of spinners a lot more. And we had a lot of batsmen who could bowl to make up overs. We had Murali. And the first 10, 15 overs, there, at a time there was a 15-over power play. After that, it became 10 overs. So at that time, you'd use Waz, Soysa to actually make sure there are not many runs were scored. But these guys were good. They'd get us 2-3 wickets also. So we were on top. And then also the thought of holding Murali back was there. So you try and push the run rate up with our bits and pieces spinners, get the rate up, and then let Murali look after one end. So we kind of had a good plan of how to go about it. But of course, playing India was very, very hard because they play spin a lot better than most other countries. So that's where we used to struggle with India. We probably wouldn't have had the same amount of success we've had with most of the other countries during that period, especially in our conditions.
You know, when you move past the 90s into the 2000s, I think that was a golden period to 2000s, both the first and the second decade, a golden period for Sri Lankan cricket. I believe it was 2 World Cup finals, 3 T20 World Cup finals. But you know, after all of that, where you had these great players coming together and these great teams coming together, is it slightly disappointing that Sri Lanka only ended up with that one trophy, given how good their team was in the 2000s?
Yeah, it was disappointing that we couldn't get over the line on a few more occasions. We did win other trophies, but not the main ones that you do mention. Being there so many times and not able to get over the line was also a crushing blow. But on most of these occasions, you got to give it to the opposition as well. You came up against some stunning opposition. Australia, for one. They didn't have a team of legends in that period. They had a squad of legends. It was such a strong lineup. So getting over them was very difficult. Like I said before, we knew how to get deep into a tournament, and then you're looking to whack one of these teams. And then 2011 also comes into that, where again, losing to India in the final, lost to a better team. Maybe tactically, Sri Lanka did miss a trick in that final. But getting to the final was a breeze. You know the opposition you are having. You know, you look at the opposition and you know, okay, this is the tricky game. And fortunately, that tricky game only came up in the final. So you got to that spot. It is very disappointing. But sometimes you do have to applaud the opposition.
Speaking of World Cups, I think you were a member of the 2007 squad as well. It was quite a successful World Cup for Sri Lanka. But as you mentioned, Australia was just a juggernaut then. I was just looking back at some of the records then to see how the two teams performed. And Australia had like something like all four of their bowlers were in the top 10 wicket takers in the tournament, and Sri Lanka was the next best with Murali and Malinga. But you know, what were your memories of that 2007 World Cup? It's known to be the longest World Cup, I think, in terms of duration.
Yeah, it was. We played everyone, didn't we, in that one? Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And India and Pakistan were out in the first round only. So you...
yes, yes.
You
yes,
beat
yes,
us.
So India was in our group.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And I remember that great game because India had slipped up against Bangladesh.
Correct. Yeah.
And we were playing India, and we knew that this was a game that was very, very important to us looking deep into the tournament, because playing India again is going to be hard for reasons that I did mention before. To the game that we play, the team that can really counter us was India. But this game was a pressure game for India. So it's a time where you really go hard at them. And that's what we did. We were able to beat India. So India were out. That's in that group stage. Then the other opposition that looking around would be Australia. And here comes the final. We again were very, very confident. We knew exactly what to do, how to play that game, and how we could get over Australia. But unfortunately for us, that particular day it rained and the game was slightly reduced. And here came a batsman who had failed the whole tournament. And he had failed in the semi-final as well. And he'd got out and he'd come in and threw his bat into his bag and had made a comment apparently saying, if we get through this semi-final and get to the final, I'm just going to block two balls and I'm going to hammer everything. And it did come off. So it was not that we played badly. And when a batsman comes with that type of an attitude and plays an innings like he did, it gets hard. And Gilchrist went on to score 140 odd. Australia got a big score. But we were in the chase. We were just about 5 or 6 runs behind when a huge cloud came in and it started raining. So trying to get ahead, we lost a wicket or two there. And then there was a bit of confusion. The umpires didn't come off when they should have. We stayed on, blah, blah, blah. And then they said we had to come back tomorrow to complete the game. And it just fell apart for us from there. So it was just a little bit of an unfortunate final. And at that stage, Australia had done so much more to be ahead of us. But we just couldn't get into it for various reasons. Initially, Gilchrist innings, and then with the weather. Whatever we had was just getting knocked back and we weren't good enough. So that was also my last game. And I had made the decision to move on. So it wasn't ideal in the end for us, 2007.
Well, you know, as Indian fans, we felt the same way in 2003. We thought we couldn't lose until we faced Australia. And both the times we played them in the World Cup in 2003, we lost. So that was an all-conquering team. You know, just the fact that you were in this era of quite a few great bowlers. You had Glenn McGrath, would have faced Shoaib, Wasim, Waqar, Jason Gillespie, Shane Warne, all these legends of that era, which you would have faced multiple times. Who do you think was the toughest to play in your experience?
Oh, for me, I would say Wasim was the toughest. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult to pick his short run-up. And he wasn't the quickest, but he would challenge you in every way. Of course, Shoaib Akhtar was quick, was very difficult to face. If you took Brett Lee and Shoaib Akhtar, probably they were the two quickest. There was another around Pakistani, but he got injured, Mohammad Zaid. He bowled off the wrong foot. Now, he was super quick, you'd say, and with his action, very hard to pick, but unfortunately for cricket, because he was good to watch as well. The tough thing about Shoaib Akhtar was he was erratic. And suddenly he'll get one straight. Mm. So not only is your wicket in danger, but also your body, because you're not attuned to it. And it's very hard when that happens. Whereas Brett Lee is very accurate. And you get into a rhythm, you know what he's going to do. I'm not saying that he's easy, but you know where and whereabouts everything's going to be. So it was a little easier, whereas your Shoaib Akhtar was more scary. Okay, let me say that, because you don't know which one's going to come quick and your body's not ready to adjust to it. But Wasim was easily the best for me. I also rate Waqar very highly. He was more a rhythm bowler to me. If he ran in properly, he was unplayable and unbelievably quick too. But that didn't happen all the time. That was the difference with Waqar.
It's very interesting that you mentioned Mohammad Zaid. We were also, when we were chatting about the bowlers you would have faced, we were thinking we would ask you, who do you think was quicker? There's always been this argument. Was Shoaib quicker or was Mohammad Zaid quicker, in your opinion?
To me, Zaid was very, very challenging. I would think Zaid didn't last that long, but he would be quick, I'd say.
Wow. So yeah, there are a lot of YouTube arguments and discussions of Pakistani panels discussing this. Maybe we've got one more answer to this question. Who was the tougher bowler to face then?
Yeah, so Wasim's the one for me. But if you say quickest, the little I faced of Mohammad Zaid, I'd say he was very quick. But Shoaib was probably the scariest. Even bowled a full toss one day, which hit me on my butt. My leg was shaking that much and swelled up. My teammates used to say, now go bat right-handed, get hit on the other.
That's fine.
So now moving on to an interesting incident. Russell, you're known as calm and composed, but probably we Indian fans remember one specific incident where we saw the tough guy come out in you and ready to, you know, do the argy bargy, as you called. So probably we'll show a small clip and then you can probably take us through what was exactly happening over there. Because we know Ganguly as someone who is, you know, in your face and is ready up for a challenge, but not really Dravid. Dravid is supposed to be the cool cool guy. So let's go through that video, Sumer.
It's a good over, just two runs of it. 40 gone, 152 for 4, Sri Lanka. Well, doing a job perhaps the umpire should be doing in suggesting Russell Arnold may be running on the wicket. Not too much to do with you, Sarov. And he's only succeeded in bringing the crowd into the game. Some words exchanged and the umpires got involved. This is when it happened, straight down the center. Really having a chat with an umpire shepherd.
Getting... Did Dravid give you an elbow over there?
No. Dravid was not. You got Dravid wrong. He was calm. He was talking to me nicely. But in my defense, if you look at that video carefully towards the end, I'm running to the angle to run to my leg side. But Mahela says no, so I have to stop. That's where I end up stopping in the middle of the pitch. Kind of. But if you analyze the angles, I'm actually going out. But anyway, I mean, these type of things do happen when you're in front. You know, there are batsmen. Everybody just gets on the pitch. You know, it's something that that tends to happen. What Rahul just told me, Russ, just stay off the pitch. Now, if you're going to talk about Rahul being annoyed or angry, I've never seen Rahul angry. Never in this instance. It was just a conversation, a friendly conversation. But I have seen him really agitated and very angry once. And that was the day Sri Lanka scored 952. He was very angry and he walked in and he told us, we'll do that to you one day. And he was so annoyed about that. That was the only time I've seen him really ruffled and annoyed about anything at all, but not in this instance. So what happened here was, it's nothing that happened there that was the conversation. So we've been playing a lot of cricket against each other and, you know, we just annoy each other. That tends to happen, and that has happened over the years. A little bit of banter. A couple of years or the year before, when India was in Sri Lanka, Ganguly got me out LBW. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, now how can I get out to Ganguly? Now I put my head down and I'm walking off. And in the banter and the little games within games that we do have, Ganguly followed me to the pavilion, having a go at me. So I did hear what he said. And that evening, I was called in for an inquiry. So those were the days where the cameras and the mics were not there and players had to give evidence. Mm-hmm. So I was called in. Okay, what did he say? What did he say? So I went in and Cammy Smith was the match referee, I think. I said, look, I didn't hear anything. I was disappointed that I was out and I was walking out. And I only saw that Saurav was following me only on the replay. So I actually didn't hear anything or didn't know anything that was happening. So now no evidence. Saurav got off with a warning. And that evening at the team hotel, John Wright was the coach. And in the lift, he said, thanks for that. Because he knew what I said. at the thing. So when this incident happened and Rahul was saying, stay off the middle, where are you riding? He said, it's okay, man. And you know, that type of thing. Rahul came to give in his opinion, where are you running and all that. So that's when I just simply said, look, please behave. I don't have time to waste coming to inquiries. So that was the kind of chirp that I made. And it probably was not in the, I mean, whatever we said was probably not in the sweetest of languages, but that was the little conversation we had.
Okay.
And later on after the games, even Sangakkara said that in an interview. I mean, we generally don't talk about these things. Saurav did come into our dressing room to make sure that we won't be complaining or you know, taking it then to further, but we definitely were not, and we haven't done it before. Or either, in fact, we are friends, we compete, and it's not about bringing or rather disrespecting others. It's just a bit of fun, and sometimes things do get out of hand and we have an argument. But that's simply what it was about. And the matter ended there. And people still keep reminding me of that and saying so many things, but it was a totally different conversation and a lot of fun.
Interesting to know such things, you know, what we see on the screen is actually much different than what actually is happening, you know, with players. But we want to also now talk about, we've talked about you as your career with Sri Lanka. I want to talk a little about, you know, the rest of the folks and also what happened after when you retired. Now, specifically with respect to two great legends playing Sri Lankan cricket, Mahila and Sangha, you know, for more than a decade, these guys served the Sri Lankan cricket. But we want to also touch upon the fact that soon after they left, there seemed to be a big void of creating quality, well, I wouldn't say quality, but, you know, lasting cricketers. Now, what we want to know from you, because obviously you have a lot of insight into the structure, into the domestic circuit, into the school cricket of the Sri Lankan, you know, framework. Let us know exactly what you feel about if there is a certain reason why such a, you know, result is that there aren't enough quality lasting players as we had seen, you know, in the initial part of the 2000s?
Yeah, there are a few reasons you could say. So in our time, when we played, we had a good core team.
Mm-hmm.
We had maybe six, seven players whose names were jotted down straight away, whether it be batting and bowling, and the rest of the team was made around it. And that's the case with a lot of the teams. So let's say when a Sangakkara or a Jayawardena came into the team, there was a Ranatunga, there was a Arvind De Silva, there was a Jayasurya, there was an Athappatthu, who was scoring runs and taking the team forward. So the younger player slots in and settles in nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So towards the end of that era you're talking about, a lot of these players moved on. And the younger players come in and suddenly the expectations are so much more. They're expected to perform at very high levels.
Hmm.
And those expectations sometimes kill them. They're judged on those who they're succeeding, which is harsh. So something to highlight there in terms of numbers in Sri Lanka cricket is Dinesh Chandimal. After a certain number of games, or let's say 20, 30 games, his numbers were a lot better than a Jayawardena or a Sangakkara, but they grew into it. Hmm. But Chandimal's expected to, when I said lot better, I'm talking about at that stage.
Initial 20, 30.
Initial. Stages. But he, for example, is expected to perform as Sangakkara was doing when he was later in his career, more mature, more established, more confident Sangakkara was doing. So then there is a bit of a disparity and these players struggle because of those expectations. So that's mm-hmm. one side of it. And then are these newer players able to come into the team and settle in? Or are they expected to perform like the big guns did? Mm-hmm. Now, don't forget, a lot of the big guns had moved on straight away. And right now, that is the problem. There are no established players because the ins and outs are really ups and downs problem, not the ins and outs. The ups and downs are really hurting them. Mm-hmm. And so when the ups happen, we are excited. And then the moment the down happens, they're out of the team. So we don't have a core that's going forward. So we needed to get to that spot. That was where we missed out in that little period in trying to get these positions sorted out for most of them. Talent, no doubt. Another thing, of course, we're missing a big time is a lot has been said about our first-class structure and, you know, a lot of easy runs, maybe lots of easy wickets and the type of cricket that's played. There's a big gap between international cricket and our first-class structure or first-class cricket. So a lot of players are learning their trade when they come up. So there are these type of factors that do tend to play a part in weighing Sri Lanka cricket down. And that's a problem that we are facing. Again, systems also forget about this. When you have a good thing going, you tend to take things for granted and you think that's going to continue to keep coming through. So you have good batsmen, you're expecting everyone's going to be good because you have good batsmen and that's the genes. Or you have good spinners. But you fail to polish them up or give them that extra opportunity, which makes them better.
Right.
And hence, you miss out. So the same with the West Indies fast bowlers. Mm-hmm. They had a battery, and then suddenly nothing. Because we tend to take things for granted and rather than keep on working at it. So it's these type of factors that add up and weigh you down. So unfortunately, Sri Lanka feeling the brunt of all that.
Interesting you mentioned Dinesh Chandimal. You know, for like a decade now, he's played for Sri Lanka. Initially started off with a great burst, had a lot of, obviously still has a lot of talent, but has been in and out, you know, a lot. Now, it's not just him. You know, if you take the case of Ajinda Mendis, you take the Angelo Matthews case into consideration as well. So there is a lot of players, for example, that come in with a lot of promise. When they hit the stage, everybody likes them. We see a lot of talent. Feel like okay, they're going to play for the next 5-6 years. You know, okay, you know, not everybody can make themselves into a Sangakkara or a Mahila Jayawardene. But there still seems something. Is it culture? For example, if you take a look at the Dinesh Chandimal shot in the last series that just concluded. A player of his stature or a guy who's played international cricket for 10 years now, yeah? Doing something like that. I mean, is there something going on with respect to, you talk about expectations. So is Dinesh Chandimal still having those expectations that were expected of him like when he started his career? Or is it just that there aren't enough quality players coming in that are filling the core from the domestic cricket?
That's a very good question. Now, when Dinesh Chandimal first came in, he was instinctive. He'd see the ball, he'll play the ball, there was no pressure. But then as time went on, he was expected to change. He was a bottom-handed player, so then this coach tried to make him a top-handed player. And the expectations curtailed his stroke-making, mm-hmm. which made him a very dull player. And the pressure was always on because you dug yourself into a hole. Mm. That's what I mean by expectations. When they push you down, then you lose your balance as a person, as what you want to do, as your strengths. So then you're battling a different battle once you fall into that hole. That's what I mean by expectations wearing you down. It's not the expectations now itself. Now they're battling to trying to get out of a hole because the expectations have pushed you down. So coming back to that game you're talking about, I can kind of understand what Chandimal was thinking. A lot was happening in that pitch. And he probably knew, even I from outside knew, that you have to look for scoring opportunities. You have to put pressure on the bowlers. Mm-hmm. But obviously he made wrong decisions in the stroke play that he picked. And I also felt that probably he was taking confidence from a previous knock that he played in that same on that same venue, which was probably his best test 100, mm-hmm. against a much better spinning spin bowling unit, and it was a counter-attacking 100. But he played different options though. Against India, he made 162 when Sri Lanka were way behind. On the in the first innings and second innings, they had lost 3 wickets for 5 runs or something, and then Chandimal came and scored 162. We got 175 ahead, bowled India out in that test match. So he was probably drawing confidence from that, but you still have to play shots that suit that pitch. And going the shot that he played, especially after hitting the ball before, did he need to? You have to take calculated risks. You don't go after every ball. So mm-hmm. when you do those type of things, you're digging yourself a hole. So it's about the balance that you create in your mind and in your execution of things and the direction that you're going in. So he knew he can do this. He knew he needs to do this. Do this meaning play an attacking, counter-attacking role to push England back. But were they the right options? So that's where you get caught. And with everything that's happening around Sri Lanka cricket, the way they batted in the first innings, the first test, you take all that into consideration, it looks a lot worse than the reality. But mm-hmm. This is how I see it. And as an international player with so much experience, you'd expect that you try and reach that balance about your game and what the team needs and the situation and make better decisions. That's what you'd expect.
Interesting. So now that we're talking about this series, what happened to the batting, you know, in the first test, the first inning, the second test, the second inning, the way, you know, we expect Sri Lanka to obviously play in at home and the way results were, obviously there's a contrast out there. So is there a reason for why Sri Lanka, you know, collapsed twice like that in just 4 innings?
Yeah, so that comes down to first-class cricket and the cricket that they're playing, that they're not working hard enough. They're not made to work hard enough for their success. Now, you can't say that they're not good players or not talented because they have achieved some amazing things in between. Mm-hmm. In the last few years, they've gone on to play some wonderful cricket. They've beaten some very good teams. They have some tremendous results. But the consistency, and they seem to do lots of silly things more often than not. And in test cricket, you can't win a game in one session, but you can lose in a session in a session or even half an hour. Mm-hmm. So it's that type of attitude, taking things for granted, thinking, right, this is England, flat pitch, we're in gold, we're just coming after South Africa where everything was hard. This is bread and butter. And then you become complacent. And you expect things to happen for you rather than actually working hard for it, rather than applying yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's these type of mistakes that Sri Lanka are battling. They're not playing all 5 days. They're playing 1 day or 2 days. And yet, they played pretty bad cricket in those test matches, but still were pretty close. They could even see the finish line. If we had another good session, you know, or if you have another good hour, we can win this. Even being so far behind, they were there and thereabouts. You always had that feeling. So it's not all doom and gloom. It's just about understanding that you have to apply yourself a lot more and play for longer periods. Short periods will only just excite you, but it's not going to give you results.
Mm, interesting. Hey, it's interesting you mentioned complacency. You know, nowadays, players have so much backing from team coaches, from the management and so on and so forth to sort of get them into that mindset. Is there a reason? So do you feel there is something that is lacking from that side as well? You know, how do you feel also about Mickey Arthur, by the way? So he's been there. Is his hiring? Do you have any opinion about that? Do you think there is a role, a bigger role that needs to be played?
It's a hard one, really. Mickey seems to getting the players together. You know, they're working hard at it. But it comes down to a lot of other factors as well. Like I said, a player coming there to learn his trade mm-hmm. is hard. That just breaks the system. There, you got to gel in And we don't have those core players, like I mentioned again. Players in and out. Injuries have been a big problem. Whenever Sri Lanka looking good, Angelo Matthews, you mentioned his name, very rarely on the park. If he dives on the field, I'm just looking, oh, is he going to get up okay? You know, it's that type of feeling. So even for a coach, with all these type of things happening, it's very difficult for a quick fix. So the whole system needs to work in one direction, I guess. And also another factor, you know, with the injuries that we do have in the subcontinent. Now, India have gone to a different level, but more often than not, a lot of our cricketers come from poor backgrounds, whereas those important growing years, nourishment isn't great. Mm-hmm. And when you come to a certain level, yes, you come into the system, you're looked after, you're trained, you build your body, you get stronger. But is your foundation strong enough? Mm-hmm. So I reckon that also plays a part in we losing a lot of players to injury.
Right.
Because the top is built, but the bottom, at the right age, right time, are they getting the nourishment that's really required for the strain, the strain that's going to come on your body later on? Mm-hmm. But that's something a cricket system will really struggle to address, because at what age do you identify players? From what age are you going to look after them? You know, it is a bigger question. Then that could be a reason why we tend to lose a lot of players to injuries. Mm. There are lots of problems that you try to work around with. But just at the moment with Sri Lanka cricket, I feel the players have, you know, you've got to start somewhere. And as a player, I think our players can apply themselves a lot better. I think they can work harder and show more knowledge, more application, more determination about the game, which might give us a start, which might also make us feel that 50% of the problems that we're seeing or talking about or even speculating about, they disappear. But I think that's where it is. From a coaching point of view, yes, there are issues you have to deal with, and it is a hard place. So it's a difficult one to really comment on whether this is working or that's working at this stage.
Interesting. So you mentioned about, you know, working on the system, and you mentioned about India taking the things to the next stage. You know, India, as you would imagine, for example, Rahul Dravid has been working so much with the youngsters, yeah. And and on the other hand, for example, if you look at the stalwarts of Sri Lanka, I'm not sure if same thing is happening. You know, Mahila Jayawardene is working with Mumbai Indians for has been working for so long now. Sangarakara is the director of the Rajasthan Royals. Do you feel if there, you know, if the Sri Lankan Cricket Board or the committee that, for example, manages youngsters or looks after how to pick things, how to pick people at the young age or identify them, would you know, benefit from the services of such you know, greats, and why is it not happening?
Well, you make a fair point. Yes, of course they will benefit, the experience, the knowledge, something to look up to, people to look up to that you respect. But then again, on the other hand, our system doesn't have the rewards that India has. So it also comes down to that. Mahila Jayawardene is better off coaching a Mumbai Indians than spending his whole year in Sri Lanka. And well, let's not talk about when I say the rewards, the payments or the financial gains, the differences that can be. So these are decisions individuals also make.
Okay.
For their lifestyle, what they want to do. And we rightly so. That's kind of decisions that everyone will make. But in some way, if our senior players or our legends are involved, it definitely will help. And at this stage, I believe a technical committee has been appointed with Aravinda, Roshan Mahanama, Sangakkara, and Muralidharan to look at betting matters. So hopefully, decisions will be made in the right direction that will benefit Sri Lanka cricket and try and get them better. That's the motive of this committee. But it can't be compared to India and India system, because the economics, the dynamics, they all work differently. And also the kitty that India has to put into all this and look after those in cricket, it just cannot be compared to what Sri Lanka can offer. And people also have to make their decisions on where they want to be, where who they want to be with, and how they want to align their lives. Those decisions are individual decisions, so that really plays a part, and rewards are such.
Right. So that's great then. So we should then look up to some great players coming, you know, in the Sri Lankan squads then. So who do you think, for example, we should, you know, look out for? We've recently seen Ember. Are there more other guys in the domestic circuit we should, you know, look out for?
These are all young cricketers. Lasith Thembuldeniya is the left-arm spinner we're talking about, who should take Sri Lanka to the next level. He's got a lot to learn, though. He's I like what I see of him, but he's got a lot to learn, in the sense he's got to bring about a lot more control. Control the batsman, not let him score freely. Meaning, what I mean by that is be more... try and work four wickets over a longer period. Maybe plan over 5-6 overs than 1 or 2 overs, which he's been doing in first-class cricket. So these type of things he learned, and he seems to have it. Our fast bowling stocks look good. Asita Fernando, Lahiru Kumara, they can get the ball go through as younger players. And in the batting department, Kusal Mendes, Dhananjay De Silva, they're still exciting and very, very young. So there's a lot more to come from. Yes, Mendes is going through a lean period. And just like Chandimal, his numbers are so much better at that stage than lots of other cricketers. And I think since his debut, he scored most international runs in that period as well as a young player. So he has got some behind him, but not actually achieved what he really can. So these are players who will excite us. In the shorter form, I think Wanindu Hasaranga is a real street fighter and a great leg spinner. So there are a few players that Sri Lanka can rely on. It's just keeping them on the park, like I said, the injuries, and hopefully have their heads in the right direction and stay patient.
Just shifting track a little bit from, you know, your perspectives on Sri Lankan cricket, and looking at your experiences as a commentator. You know, you've been fortunate enough, I think, to see some of the greatest test knocks and commentated on one of the greatest test knocks ever, which was Kushal Pereira's fourth innings 100 chasing against South Africa in South Africa with the number 11 batting on the other end. You know, how would you rate that? Perhaps before that, maybe you can talk us through your feelings while watching that and the commentary crew's feelings then. Where would you rate that? Would you rate that higher than Stokes' innings in Headingley in 2019 Ashes, where he also batted with Leach?
Yeah, to me, yes. Stokes was batting in home conditions. Stokes had a couple of chances that did go down. And even that that decision towards the end, whereas Kusal Pereira was in alien conditions against quality fast bowling attack, Dale Steyn's, Rabada's, and from nowhere, and it was chanceless. So for many reasons, I would go with Kusal Pereira.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic knock. It's hard to think, you know, India struggled so much to win in South Africa, and Sri Lanka went down there and they won 2-0, I think, right? Is it 2-0? Yeah.
And that's why I said this team, this set of players have achieved unbelievable things in between. Yeah. So, won the first one, but till we won that, till the end, till the last 10-15 runs, you just felt it was not happening. You just felt that it was just a matter of time when South Africa produced that delivery, because there was a lot happening in the pitch as well. It was only around 20 to get, and there was an inside edge or a top edge that flew over for six that... I looked at Sean Pollock and we just said, looks like this is really happening. And all the excitement in the South African box rightly went quiet, because, you know, you can talk about being unbiased about a commentator or anything. But, you know, No, you, there's got to be some heart in it. It's got to mean something. You mustn't be unduly biased. But if there is no 60-40, 65-35, you know, your heart's not in it. So these type of reactions, these type of emotions should be seen. I mean, that's the beauty of it. And for a person also, emotions are important. So it was a case of talking South Africa up and how well they were doing at that stage, but at the same time appreciating what Kusal Pereira was doing and the belief that, oh my God, there's going to be something sensational happening here came in only when Sri Lanka got it down to about 15 runs, or rather Kusal Pereira got it down to 15 runs. But then talking of that series, they went on to St. George's Park from there and they played brilliantly once again, bowled exceptionally well and knocked South Africa out. So that was a great achievement, backing up what happened in Durban. So these guys, if they want to, they can do things.
So talking about batting, Russell, we had some great batsmen coming out of Sri Lanka, Sangha, Mahela, Arvinda, we had Rana Tunga, Attappattu. But who's been your favorite?
Growing up, Arvinda, of course. Watching him bat, fantastic. The way he'd play the ball, the type of things he tried to do was outstanding. So for me, it was Arvinda who, as a youngster, I was looking up to. And then ended up playing my first straight from school, started playing alongside Arvinda and Hashan at the NCC. So that was our home ground. And to me, Arvind it was.
Yeah, I think a lot of people liked him. He was popularly called as Mad Max. In fact, I was a big fan, even though he kind of smashed us in the semi-final. He was smashing Kumble all over the place. Definitely one of my favorite batsmen. So coming to the current series, England versus India. So you had the chance of, you know, commentating on the England versus Sri Lanka series. How do you see this series going ahead with India?
I did think England played very, very good cricket. I think the way they set it up by coming to Sri Lanka and coming over here was kind of a warm-up, getting used to somewhat the conditions and come and take on India. Joe Root's in exceptional form. Talking to him in Gaul, I understood that he was enjoying it. He was looking at it as a challenge. And was in exceptional mind space. And he's showing that even today, the way they're going, doing their business, being patient. But for them to have won against Sri Lanka like that, I think it was more a gift. But I don't expect that to happen here in India. I expect India to be a lot more of a handful. Can they back up what they did in Australia? Is going to be very interesting because it's been a hard time as well, right? With all these bubbles, travel, and it takes a lot of energy. You're coming off such a high to straight away go and achieve another high because England are switched on. They kind of know that they're there to play. They're not there to whinge like in the past. In the past, you get them, oh, it's hot, it's spinning. How do we do this? So it's easier. They're not whinging anymore. They're there to play. So it's going to be interesting. I'm just glad now and again I glance because I'm checking the score.
318, 319.
320 for three, Roots okay. On 150. So they're doing things nicely. So now they've pushed India into a position from where they'll have to be careful. They'll have to bat really well and not go down in this one. So looking forward to this series. Just thought that maybe India missed a trick in their selection. Kuldeep with something different, some more variety on a flattish pitch might have been a bit better, given them a bit more of an option. But it's now going to come down to India's batting.
Let me just ask you one follow-up question. Since you saw these two guys in close quarters, do India have to be scared of Bess and Leach or should we just not worry too much?
Look, to be honest, I didn't want to mention names. The English fast bowlers bowl really well in Sri Lanka. But the spinner shouldn't have got such easy wickets. Mm-hmm. So, once the pitch starts turning, of course, they'll get something more. But they were bowling loose balls in Sri Lanka every over. Mm-hmm. So, you still have to respect the opposition, whoever they are. But the word scared of them, nah.
Okay. Oh. Interesting.
Good to hear.
Talking about spinners, so you once revealed that Rahul Dravid had told you about Washington Sundar in the Under 19 World Cup 2016. Are there any other young players you have seen or he has mentioned to you about that should be looked at in the future?
Yes. Yeah, so 2016. I think that was the team which had Pant.
Uh-huh.
Ishan Kishan was the captain.
Captain.
There were a lot of big names. There was a fast bowler. His name was Inay, tallest boy. He played a game or two. So these boys were really shining. His name will come to me. Sundar Washington was batting down the order and he was a younger player. Washington mm-hmm. Sundar could have played the next Under 19 World Cup as well. But India have the rule, only India have it. It's not an overseas rule or an ICC rule that only if you play one, we'll only get to play one Under 19 World Cup. So that's why Washington Sundar didn't go back later. But in this one, yes, he was a younger player and the younger guy. That's when this conversation came up and he was talking about the punts and I think Sarfraz was also in that team.
Yes, Sarfraz Khan.
Yeah.
Khan.
Sarfraz Khan, right? He's now playing for Punjab. He played for RCB.
RCB earlier,
Earlier. Now I saw him playing with Saeed Mustaf.
Ali Trophy.
Mumbai. Yeah.
For Mumbai.
Yes. In the SMA, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So he was also there. That's when in conversation he said, because Washington was the younger guy, not really getting much opportunity, that's when he started telling me, "Now keep an eye out for this guy," because others were already shining and Washington was the little kid on the side.
Interesting.
Excellent. Talking about kids, Anil, one last final question. You have son Akash. Is he interested in the game? Is he going to follow in the footsteps of his father?
Oh, it'll be great if he does. But yeah, he likes the game. He's passionate about it. So he does play a little bit for his school and the club around. He's enjoying it at this stage. And we are happy seeing him happy and grow with it.
Perfect. So will Premadasa be his home ground or would SCG be his home ground?
Well, if he can play anywhere, I'll be happy. Those decisions are a long way off and he also has a lot of growth to do. So it's like I mentioned in my childhood where things were just flowing and we were just enjoying ourselves and then you find yourself somewhere. So at this stage, that's where life is. So it's a hard one to answer. It's a dream. What you're talking about is a dream.
Yeah.
Great.
Sure. Thank you so much, Russell. And we had a great time interacting with you. I hope you enjoyed as much as we did. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you, Russell.
Guys, take care.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye. Bye.
I check it like you read Singh Bell in it, yeah? I really don't mind. You hit me once,
I hit you back. He's bowling like my Auntie Annie when she'd had too much sherry to drink. Played over my head, then I set fire. I said,
beta, beta, hota, aur baap, baap, hota.